presented by Bee Matters with host Jacqueline Peterson and Dr. Haley Estrom.
Feeding does matter.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Feeding Does Matter. I'm Jacqueline Peterson, CEO of Feeding Matters, and a very happy PFD and ARFID Awareness Month to all of you. So I am so excited to be talking with a volunteer of Feeding Matters who is also in the feeding world as a professional herself. Dr. Emily Lively is with us, who is chair of the ARFID Guide within the ARFID Resources Committee. So, Dr. Lively, thank you so much for joining us today.
It's my pleasure. I'm honored to have been asked, and it's really lovely to be connected with Feeding Matters.
Thank you. So, Emily, maybe can you share a little bit about your journey into feeding? Oftentimes everybody finds themselves in this journey in a different way. And so my co-host and I always love to see, like, how did you even find yourself here? What made you curious about this work?
It all started back when I was a student at uni, actually, and I was lucky enough to do a placement at, I'm based in Adelaide in Australia, and I was lucky enough to do a placement at the Women's and Children's Hospital with the first feeding speech pathologist position. So that was nearly 30 years ago.
Yeah.
And I guess that kind of got me interested in the area. I moved to regional South Australia. And so I had a very varied caseload of adults and children and, children with all sorts of challenges. Feeding for some of them was a challenge. And so I kind of had a few skills and interest in that area. And then I moved to the UK, and probably that's where my passion was ignited by an amazing colleague that I worked with. One of my positions, she was a dietitian, and she really took me under her wing. And my background is a speech pathologist, and she took me under her wing. We were working in a centre where children who had been discharged from hospital but with significant developmental needs and medical needs would then come in the community, and we would support them. And I guess that's where I learned the world of tubes and tube feeding and, a lot of medical complications, medical language, and really started to see what families and parents were going through. So when I returned back to Australia, I was working in a tertiary hospital and on the pediatric and the neonatal intensive care units, also with the children who were undergoing autism diagnoses. And so feeding just was, intertwined in all of that work. And I guess that's just kept what drawing me.
Feeding just kept popping up, and you just kept finding yourself as a part of feeding work?
It did. And so when I actually went on maternity leave with my first child, I thought, well, this is what I love doing. Now's as good a time as any to start up a little bit of private work and see how it goes, just focusing on feeding. That was something that wasn't happening in Australia, very much at all, certainly not in South Australia. And it just kind of grew and grew from there.
Oh, that's amazing. How long have you been doing your private work?
20 odd years.
So you've been really witness to how feeding has progressed as a field.
Absolutely. It's been really interesting, which is also why I'm excited to be part of Feeding Matters, because, from Australia, it appears that, America leads the world in, feeding, or has a lot of research. There's a lot of amazing researchers internationally, but a lot of research does come out of America. And so I've found that fascinating, because it doesn't necessarily reflect what is happening in Australia.
Yeah, it doesn't translate as easily sometimes. That's one of my questions for you, actually. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I'm really interested to be able to give a voice to, what happens in other countries as well. Not just on paper through research, but actually to help share that information, because I also know that ARFID is and pediatric feeding disorder is, you know, it's starting to become more known in Australia. But our Medicare system, which is our health funding system, you know, doesn't quite recognise it yet. Is it an eating disorder? Isn't it an eating disorder? Can it therefore be subjected to certain funding models or not? We also have our National Disability Insurance Scheme, the NDIS, which is a federal government initiative that supports children and adults with lifelong disability. And there's certain funding attached to, you know, certain conditions. And where does ARFID sit in that? It's a minefield, and at the bottom of it are the children and the families that actually just want help and want to understand how they can move forward and support their children and help them to grow and thrive and learn.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. That's always been what's been so both kind of like interesting as well as, I guess, somewhat disappointing that as much as this field has progressed, it feels like there's so much more that needs to happen. And you see like all the things that we need to do in the United States, what we need to do for the field more broadly, and then every single country and what they need as we talk to every person in every single country and what is happening on the ground. And you're right, there is kind of that difference between what's happening in research versus maybe what's happening in terms of direct access for families.
And I understand, or I think I understand, in the States a lot of the funding models come from, you know, if you access this program, it will be paid for, or, you know, there's all the programs have to be very evidence-based and here's the outcome data, and therefore you can have this much money to access this program.
It's a bit of a challenge too. It's very diagnostic specific. So when we try to help families navigate, are they receiving a PFD diagnosis? Are they receiving an ARFID diagnosis, or is it co-diagnosis? Some of that is based on what do they need, which profession or intervention are they unlocking, and in regards to how is that being paid. But there's a difference between is someone accessing a program, is someone accessing any sort of like private practice or other sort of intervention. And there's still like such a lack of qualified providers because the field is still emerging and there's not great educational pathways for the field either. Do you see that same challenge in your area as well?
Yes, I don't feel that Australia is quite as diagnostically focused in terms of, you know, dollars, or you can access that program, you have this diagnosis.
Sure.
To a degree, the NDIS does, you know, if you have a diagnosis of ASD, you might be eligible for this much funding, but that much funding is then shared between physio, OT, dietetic, speech pathology, you know, other allied health services as well. So it's not, here's some money to go and do that specific feeding program or to do that physio program. So there is still choice for families to find an approach, I guess, that sits with them, because, you know, there has been a lot of training, visiting specialists coming to Australia, particularly probably over the last 10 years in feeding that we never had before. You know, I remember one of my first professional developments I did 20 odd years ago was a sensory processing workshop to understand sensory processing as a speech pathologist working in feeding, because I saw that that's what, you know, that's what a lot of these children were struggling with, was the sensory of eating. But that was never a, you know, that was never a thing. So, you know, awareness has increased. There's a lot more Australian-based training now as well, which, you know, is really robust, which is great to see. And then I guess for families, trying to find those providers that have the approach that feels right for them is, you know, is always going to be a challenge, I think, finding that therapist that...
Yes, that really suits what their family is looking for and their family's values. I would say that's the same thing in the United States too.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. So I feel that we, you know, ARFID is certainly still a developing area of in Australia, who can diagnose it, who can give this label.
Yeah,
it's certainly a lot of families come to us. My private practice, Lively Eaters, you know, we're working on a diagnostic clinic, but to us, we will treat the child for and the family for what the child and the family's challenges are, whether they do or don't have a specific label for it. But that confusion of parents, you know, obviously researching themselves and saying, I think my child has ARFID. Where can I go to have this assessed? And I'm not sure that there's the it's not the depth, it's probably the breadth of people who are confident to say, yes, it's ARFID, or yes, it's, you know, binge eating disorder, or yes, it's an eating disorder, or actually, mm-hmm. no, it's none of them. It's pediatric feeding disorder, or yeah, I think it's a big piece of work here to do around that. I get the sense that that's a similar pattern internationally, which
I think globally we are really trying to figure out what is a. I was just talking with someone earlier today and I was like, it'd be just so great, especially with the advancement of AI, if we can really bring all the fields together, get everyone through kind of one pipeline and get like a really comprehensive kind of quick screening, quick assessment to then dive into some of the further needs as it relates to research evaluation and some of that intervention and assessment management development pieces. But yeah, it's definitely a challenge for sure. I think that we are on the right track in terms of we needed a shared understanding, a shared language. We needed to be able to like work together across different fields and disciplines. And that's really, I think, the hope. And that's what's also so interesting about a lot of the committees that do the resource development with Feeding Matters. And you, in leading one of those committees, are able to work with like different disciplines. And I think what's really unique about the ARFID Resources Committee is there's such an international presence on that committee. We do have it in some other aspects, especially with our international conference, but this has been the first committee where I think there's just more of an international balance, which is really lovely. It's made for such an interesting scheduling dynamic, but it's been really great. So what kind of got you open or interested in, I know you said kind of bringing that international voice, but how long have you been aware of Feeding Matters, or what made you say like when the call for leaders opened, that's it made you interested in saying yes to this type of a position?
I remember signing up for Feeding Matters, I think when it first, opened.
Really? Oh, that's amazing, Emily.
There was a list, I think, or an email that came out to, you know, sign up at the services that you provide so that you can go on the database.
Yeah, the provider directory probably.
Yes, that's it. Uh-huh. So I remember doing that years ago. And so I guess I've been on the mailing list since then and attending the conference each year virtually, using the online on-demand access. And I see the calls for papers every year and the calls for conference presenters and then the call came out to for committee members, and I just thought this might be a really nice way to give back to the community, utilize some of my research skills that I've kind of, you know, since finishing my PhD in 2023, I was just.
You were probably done. You needed a little bit of a break in research, I would imagine.
I want to do another, you know, write another research paper again. And I thought, actually, this is such a complicated area that I would like more clarity on as well. And I think working with others in the area to seek that clarity for families was something that I could give back.
Oh, well, it's amazing, Emily. Really appreciate you being open to share and volunteer in that way. We have developed a lot of resources over the years. And the hope is that it does provide that clarity for families. And it was back in 2019 when we first developed the Pediatric Feeding Disorder Family Guide. Mm-hmm. And we just did the second edition of that a little over a year ago. But in really trying to navigate the overlap and the diagnostic confusion of PFD and ARFID, we realized we don't, you know, ARFID's included in the PFD family guide because PFD can transition into ARFID and it can be co-diagnosed. But we knew that we needed something very specific to ARFID. While there are a lot of the challenges that families experience that overlap between the two, we knew that there needed to be something specific. So maybe share a little bit about the project in general, the guide that you all are developing, and why you think it's kind of important and necessary for the field.
Yeah, so where we're currently at with the guide, as you mentioned, there's volunteers from America, from Canada, from Ireland, from Australia that are working together to, I guess, not, you know, not copy the PFD guide, but follow a similar pathway of what is ARFID, how do we access support and services, who can diagnose it, what are some of the common challenges that families experience, some of the problem solving, how do I talk to my friends, how do I explain it to my child's school, how do I explain it to my, you know, my family, looking at assessment options, therapy options, and just really trying to provide more clarity. You know, the number of times that I've used the Feeding Matters handout that has the ARFID on one side and PFD on the other side in workshops that I've presented, just because you're looking at them side by side and it's really confusing. Mm-hmm. And I know Pamela Dodrell, Dr. Pamela Dodrell came and spoke in Australia a couple of years. She came back home.
Yes, back home.
A couple of years ago. And even hearing her, you know, she was on the consensus paper and some of the consortiums around the differential diagnosis and even hearing the back conversations of how confusing it can be for the, you know, the top experts in the field. How do parents?
Oh, exactly. Yeah. If it's confusing, we're in a room of experts of both fields.
Yeah.
It's certainly even more confusing for families. And that's why I think developing something that meets families where they are is so important. And that's what it seems like you and your committee's goal really is, to make sure that it's usable, really family centered, and supportive.
And accessible as well. I think the way that the Pediatric Feeding Disorder Guidebook is on the Feeding Matters website, it's a really easy to use format, and it's accessible. I think that's really important as well. And you know, interestingly, how does this translate to other cultures as well, and other countries and other languages? Because obviously there are big cultural differences too, globally, and what some people see as a challenge or a difference, other cultures or families will say, well, that's just my child and that this is just what we do, and you know, that's okay, and that's fine too. But trying to tease apart all those nuances to support families is our goal.
Mm-hmm. Completely agree with the cultural pieces and the need to make sure that the guide is really accessible. And you all have been doing a lot of research and literature review to pull together a lot of what's in the field currently and what might be helpful for families. How are you going about that process of pulling together a lot of things? I think There's just so many resources out there. We do always like our resources to be done by committee in development with a lot of the existing evidence and literature that's out there. How are you all approaching that as a committee?
So as a committee, we've put together an outline of what we think might be useful to have in the guide, and then had shared discussions around whether there be specific leads on who will take certain chapters, utilizing their clinical, knowledge and skills as well, with two or three people being responsible for each chapter, so that there is that kind of international overlap as well. And then using, evidence-based research papers, published books, the data that's currently available, to pull together, a bit like doing a mini literature review.
Yeah, there's like a mini literature review.
Yeah, to actually pull together the current evidence base and then translate that in a way that is, easy for parents, teachers, carers, other professionals to understand, but always with an evidence base of what's actually happening. And, because this is a fairly new area of, with a specific diagnosis and therapy options, there isn't a lot of data information out there on therapeutic outcomes. I think we can certainly extrapolate from other programs and approaches, but we're still in the early stages of that literature search, so it'll be interesting to see what we pull together.
Yeah, and I think that what's nice about you coming on, and we'll certainly be sharing this process as it continues, and especially when it comes out, and maybe even have you back to share when it comes out. But I would say that if you are out there and you're listening and you're either a professional in the ARFID field, or you are a parent or a caregiver or a person with ARFID or maybe an adult with ARFID, please let us know what might be helpful and valuable to you. We've done a lot of that reflecting and discussion, and have asked around a lot about what might be helpful for and supportive for creating something like this. I often think of these guides as like kind of your like 101, like you just found out about this. Here's like kind of your dictionary of sorts, or here's how you navigate this complex condition. But, would love to hear from the community. Feel free to email us or DM us if you have any thoughts or considerations about what Emily and the team needs to be considering for this guide as well, because we do really want to make sure it's meaningful and accessible.
Absolutely. That would be amazing. Particularly people with, lived experience and, as you say, adults who perhaps didn't realize or recognize or know that there was a name for what they'd been experiencing for years and how they've managed to navigate that over, from childhood to adulthood would be really amazing to have their insight.
Mm-hmm. Yes, definitely. And what's kind of been maybe something that surprised you? I know you all are very early on in this process, in this committee development, but anything that's surprised you so far in this work?
Not specifically surprised. I think it's been reassuring that everyone is still trying to find their way with diagnosis and, therapy options. And so that's not surprising, but it's certainly exciting then to be able to say this, there's direction for where we need to put research, effort, energy, understanding.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes, definitely. And I hope too that this guide can bridge that gap. While the we know that the research is emerging and ongoing, but sometimes families need answers right now, and that's what I love about the work that you all are doing, is it's a way to give those answers with what's needed right now, knowing what we know, and then we'll continue to update every resource that we have at Feeding Matters. We do try to do an evidence review and an update over time as well.
Yeah, that's really important because it's changed so much in the last 10 years or, you know, 13 years.
I feel like it's something new every year that we need to just like constantly be updating. Yeah, so true. But that's a good thing. That's what's so nice about like how this field has grown. And I'm sure you feel that way being in the field so long that there was like this almost like it was like a small feeding world. And everybody kind of knew everybody, but it's so amazing to see how much it's grown and that like, yeah, people don't know each other. And that's an okay thing because everybody has their part in this ecosystem and they play their part and the field advances because of it. And that's a wonderful thing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I would agree that, you know, even in Australia, the number of feeding therapists is just, it's massive now compared with where it was 10, 20 years ago. Yeah.
Wonderful.
And there's a lot of passion too for it. We at Lively Eaters offer placements for university students and in Adelaide at the different unis and they're always really, highly regarded and wanted and lots of students coming through have this interest in feeding therapy. Yet interestingly, it hasn't been written. Feeding therapy isn't a large component of our university degrees in Australia. It's slowly kind of, you know, filtering in there, but it's certainly not a semester long topic or a, you know, a year long topic. It's a few guest lectures or, you know, a small component, yet there's a lot of interest in the area. And we see that through the applicants for students. So, that's another dynamic that
completely
needs to shift as well, right at that uni level. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I imagine that the placements are very popular because I think that on the ground training is often what really launches a student into this work a little bit more. Because we've met many students who have such an interest and passion for it. But similarly, and I think this is a very common thing across the world, is there isn't really that foundational piece in universities to allow for that kind of specialty education development for this work. And my hope is that will change, but love that there are still places that offer that training that you all offer to be able to have that placement, because I think that's the only thing that's available for people besides just kind of them kind of owning their journey and trying to do a lot of self courses.
Yeah, agree. And you know, there is a big focus at uni on adult dysphagia, for example, and the acute kind of adult swallowing world. There's a small component on pediatric dysphagia, but we know that dysphagia is, you know, one small aspect of feeding disorder.
Yeah.
And that there are so many other presentations that we work with as therapists. And so students get this little snippet on the swallowing aspect of feeding, but not on every other aspect that might influence feeding, whether it be physical, neurological, developmental, medical, family, environmental,
all of it. Sensory, yeah. Yes, you know, a full system.
You know, one day I'd love to be able to perhaps sit down with some unis and see what might be able to be, you know, offered. But that's, you know,
that's on the Emily, we agreed. We always have all of these wishes that we want for the field because you can only do so much at a time. You have to prioritize and all these things. So we have what we call a cookie list, and that's what it becomes like our wishes of things that we need that we know need to happen in the field. And I will say, like, education in general, or like specialty education pathways, or any of those things are like on that cookie list. So we'll make sure that that's on the cookie list too, especially in Australia.
There are some wonderful therapists in Australia who are doing amazing work with the unis and with research.
Yes. No, you all have done so much and have your own like stronghold in this, in advancing this field.
Oh, that's nice feedback. But yeah, that there are some amazing therapists that are really pushing forward with research, with the link between uni and learning and clinical, because I think that's a really important piece too. Is we need the research, we need the researchers, but we also need to have the reality of what's happening, you know, on the ground for the families and yep. within the bigger system as well. So
yep.
The clinician researchers are, yeah.
And how we can, yeah, disseminate that information. Because I think it's, you know, the research getting done, but universities being aware of it is really challenging with, it's hard to stay on top of the latest research as well. So that dissemination piece becomes really important. And learning from what's happening on the ground is really important too. I'm just so much that needs to happen in this field, but you own such a great part of it. And I'm really, really excited for the ARFID guide. For those of you listening, we are hoping to get this done over these next, you know, we'll Emily and the committee will be working on it, and we will share when it's available. Because it is meant to be a resource for you all to leverage and use in your daily lives. So Emily, thank you so much for the work that you're doing on that and how you're such a leader in that work, and in general, ARFID resources and all the work that you do in your professional private practice as well. Really appreciate you.
Oh, not at all. It's my pleasure. And I'm just as excited to be part of the ARFID resource committee as well, and working with amazing colleagues, globally. And
you all have an amazing committee. The committee members that are listening, you all are incredible too. I had such a privilege of being able to meet the committee on their first kickoff, and you all come from such varied backgrounds and international backgrounds, which is wonderful to see. So yes, you have a stellar committee for sure.
Yeah, no, it's exciting. And thank you to Feeding Matters too for all the work that you're doing on advancing the field and trying to make this information accessible to families and therapists and really highlight, I think something that Feeding Matters has done beautifully is highlight that these conditions are real. They're not just, you know, naughty children or kids being
totally
or
yes.
You know, so I think that's been really powerful for so many families to have an understanding of why their children and young people are struggling. So yeah. Thank you, Feeding Matters as well.
Thank you, Emily. I do feel like when you can have an answer for something, you feel validated, and it means a whole lot. Is there anything that I maybe missed asking you, or anything that you wanted to share while we're together right now?
I don't think so.
Okay.
No.
Well, it's been a pleasure talking with you, and really excited to see what your committee comes up with. Thank you for sharing. And for those of you, thank you for sharing and participating in Awareness Month and really kind of making sure that everybody's aware of this and that it is real and that these families are struggling. So thank you, everyone. Have a wonderful week, and we'll see you next time. Thank you, Emily.
Thanks, Jacqueline.
Bye.
When supporting a loved one with feeding differences, it's easy to feel like you are alone. At Feeding Matters, our hope is for you to find the community, resources, and support that you need through our Power of Two parent-to-parent mentoring program. Parents in need of support are matched with one of our volunteer family coaches who have lived experience with their own child and can offer emotional support, resources, and guidance to lessen the isolation that families face with pediatric feeding disorder, or PFD, as well as avoidant restrictive food intake disorder, or ARFID. Families can request a one-time phone call or a three-month or six-month match by filling out the request form on our website. A family coach will make contact via email first, and then by phone or text message, typically within 2 to 3 days. For more information, please contact us at 623-242-5234, extension 306, or email at info@feedingmatters.org. You are not alone.